This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and we are not going to waste any time today. We're going to get right into our guest. He's a name and a face and a voice you know well. He's been on this podcast a number of times. He goes by Duck Joshua Nunn at Step on a Duck there on social media from the Action Network, friend of the pod. And Duck, always great to have you back on. You and I are always chomping at the bit to chop it up here on the podcast. So let's do it. Let's jump right into it. We are now less than 9 weeks away before week zero kicks off. We got some week zero best bets that you like. Totals were just put out for week zero and week one. But Duck, how's the offseason been treating you? We haven't talked in about a month, which feels like a million years on this podcast.
Yeah, it does. It was fun the last time we talked. We were able to find some value in the G5 regular season, G6 now regular season win market. And I love bouncing ideas off of you. And it's fun to talk about some of the emerging derivatives that have come out there. But no, the offseason's gone really well. We're knee deep into prep for what we've got going on at Action Network. Pod season will be dropping here where we're going to do about 20 different recordings between July and August. We're going to have some fun guests on our pod, and we're just kind of in the minutia of preparing for the season, which is 60 short days away, and it's going to be here before we know it.
I know. It's going to be great. Can't wait. Week zero, actually a pretty decent slate, as my listeners know. All right, we heard it, Tim. Yes, there's good games in week zero. I know. But I'm excited. I'm excited for it. If you have an email question, you could email us at cfbpod@vsin.com. You know, we were exchanging texts back and forth over the weekend, and I was thinking about, all right, we're going to get some best bets, which you have. We're going to get into the weeds. But let's talk some big boys right out of the chute. Let's talk a little SEC. For those who have not read it or seen it, Duck has an extensive breakdown of all of the teams in the SEC looking at win totals, and we'll get into your favorite play in a little bit. But I want to start with Georgia. They are the favorite to win this division. And, you know, we had Matt Grill on from DraftKings Sportsbook last week, and he said, I'm a little bit lower on Texas than maybe the rest. And that, you know, that puts it into context, right? He still had him six in his power ratings. They have a brutal schedule. I'm curious, Duck, where you are on the two top dogs. And if they are your two top dogs, Georgia and Texas.
Well, to start with Georgia, I think this team has a chance to be really good this year. I look at Gunnar Stockton returning. He was so clutch last season when his team had to have it. He really delivered 70% completions, 24 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. He really spread the ball around really efficiently, and I think he'll be even more improved this upcoming 2026 season. The running back room is loaded. They've got three guys who would either start or rotate as the number two running back for every team in the country. Really, Georgia should have a strong running game again this year. The offensive line looks shored up. They are young. The center and the left tackle are buttoned up. And if the other pieces of the O-line gel and play well together, and they will have some games to figure it out, I would really expect the rushing numbers to look really good and for the sack numbers to be low for Georgia. Just look no further than the tight end room. They've got three dudes that are going to create mismatches at the SEC level. And they'll be able to help out in the run game. Elias Williams is 6'7", 255, a freak athlete. Lawson Lucky, 6'4", 245. Jaden Radell should get more snaps this year. Just a really strong unit. And honestly, for Georgia, I think the defense could be really good. Last year, I thought the front seven was kind of underwhelming. But this year, Gabe Harris is back. Elijah Griffin, Quintavious Johnson. The front is loaded and really should secure more pressure and more havoc against their opponents. I think the secondary is really set to benefit from that. And again, they'll get three games to kind of figure out what they want to do defensively and figure out what secret combinations to unlock in the two deep. Right now, I project 9.9 wins for Georgia. I've got these guys favored in 11 games this year. When you look at the 16 to 18 team super conferences, you really can get some unbalanced scheduling. You don't see a lot of that in leagues like Conference USA or even the Sun Belt, where they still have the divisions. But in the Big Ten, the ACC, and the SEC, scheduling is so important. And Georgia plays my weakest SEC schedule this year per my metrics. They avoid A&M, they avoid Texas, they avoid LSU. And, you know, they do play Bama and Ole Miss on the road, but they get those games with revenge off of losses from last season, and they will have some early season tests with Oklahoma and Vandy coming in that I think will really help prepare them before those tough SEC road games. I think Georgia is a really dangerous bunch, and I would absolutely bet these guys to win the SEC. I like over the win total, but you know, maybe the VIG has priced out any potential edge there. So I passed on the regular season win total. It's been a long time since Georgia's lost three regular season games. But I think Georgia, push comes to shove, they would be my pick to win the SEC. I'm a hair lower on Texas. We can talk about them next if you want.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned, you know, it's been a long time since Georgia's lost three regular season games. We were discussing that just a little while ago with Ohio State. It's kind of crazy to see both these teams at 9.5. Granted, you got to lay the juice on the over. Worth noting, and this is kind of a weird quirk, and I don't know how much this gives an advantage to Georgia. You know, I actually saw your colleague Stuckey ask the question about Notre Dame, Wisconsin, and what the ticket allotment was going to be when that game's played at Lambeau Field. And it's going to be 50-50 split between Notre Dame and Wisconsin. That's the agreement that they came to for this game. But worth noting, the cocktail party this year is in Atlanta. So a little weird quirk. You know, if you're reading your Phil Steele or whatever, and you're looking at the schedules, and it says Atlanta in parentheses, that's not a misprint. It will be played in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So I don't know, Duck, if that changes your handicap on that game at all, as opposed to being in Jacksonville. My guess would be it's still going to be a 50-50 split from a ticket standpoint. But Georgia does get a little bit of a benefit, I guess, having that game played in Atlanta as opposed to Jacksonville.
Yeah, and a familiar stadium and a stadium they generally play pretty well in. I would expect their fans to show up, even with a 50-50 ticket allotment. You see some of that change from time to time in the secondary market. And I mean, that is dog country. So it's only helping Georgia playing that game in Atlanta.
Yeah, I was looking through scheduling quirks, trying to find there was a tricky spot. Not really. I mean, you could say at Ole Miss after the Florida game, but, you know, they're going to be up for Ole Miss. Maybe at South Carolina late in the season could be kind of a weird spot there for Georgia. But, you know, you and I love to look for those situational handicap opportunities. I didn't really find one necessarily for Georgia, but let's get into Texas, because this will be the third straight guest on this pod that has had some questions about the Longhorns, and not necessarily saying they're going to be, you know, overrated or terrible, but, you know, there's a lot of expectations when it comes to this Texas team. You know, they're coming off a season where, you know, they didn't make the college football playoff. They end the season on a high with their bowl win over Michigan. But according to many metrics, Duck, they have the hardest schedule in college football this year. We all know about the week 2 showdown against Ohio State in Austin right now. Game of the year line has that around a pick. So I'm curious your breakdown of this Texas team with a win total at 9.5.
I mean, I guess based on what we saw last season, doubt has crept into my mind about whether or not Arch Manning is that dude to really see Texas ascend to the top. I just felt like Texas was so fortunate in many situations last year. I mean, they're messing around potentially losing against Kentucky and Mississippi State. They were so fortunate to have played Oklahoma in a situation where their quarterback was hurt. I mean, come on, Tim. These guys were struggling with UTEP last year. It didn't look right offensively. And with Texas, they're going to have two major prove-it situations early in the season when they host Ohio State. And then in week 4, when they go to Tennessee, I think we'll know a lot more and we'll have a lot more clear picture of what Texas is all about after they have to face those two opponents. I mean, the O-line looks good for Texas this year. They should be able to run the football. Hollywood Smothers comes in at running back. Relique Brown comes in from ASU. I think the talent in the backfield is real. And they've got some guys on the outside. Emmett Mosley, Ryan Wingo comes back. Cam Coleman is in from Auburn. They've got weapons on the outside. And with more of an effective run game, I think that maybe that takes a little bit of the pressure off of Arch Manning to have to be the guy and show the heroism week in and week out. There are some losses in the front 7 for Texas. There's a chance maybe they're not as tough up front. But getting Biles in from Pitt and having Hero Canoe and Alex January come back on the D-line is just so huge. So we'll see. Again, I don't think they're going to be garbage. I think Texas is definitely a strong team, well-deserved of a top 15 or top 10 type of ranking. But, you know, I project 8.6 wins for Texas this year. I think 9-3 is the most likely result. I lean under the win total, but I think there are some spots situationally where I just want to fade the Longhorns against the number. I don't think they're going to beat Ohio State in week 2. I would play the Buckeyes there. And you know, there are some tough road games. They've got to go to A&M at the end of the season. They go to LSU. They got Ole Miss and Florida coming in. So, I mean, the schedule is quite tricky. This is a team where I really want to see what it looks like after those two early season tests before I put a lot of stock in Texas. They could ascend, but I have Georgia a notch above them.
Let's get to their arch rival, Oklahoma. You know, one of the few things we still have tried and true in college football is Red River at the Cotton Bowl, middle of October. We get that again, both the teams coming off of byes. And I saw John Mateer gave a quote to, I think it was On Three over the weekend. I believe he was at the Manning Passing Academy. And he said, with his hand injury last year, the thumb injury, he said it was like throwing a baseball with two fingers. His quote continued. He said, "I have no regrets in the challenge I put myself through. Obviously, it didn't work out. Like, it sucked. We all watched it. I'm not saying that, but it's just the result. I learned a lot, and you can learn that you can adapt and then in the offseason go back." You know, it's funny, Duck, because I felt like last year, John Mateer was kind of this like, you know, shiny new toy. Hey, this guy's coming in from Washington State and his offensive coordinator is going to be down there. He's going to win the Heisman Trophy. And I just said, hey, let's pump the brakes a little bit on John Mateer. And he ends up getting the hand injury. It kind of derails things. It almost feels like maybe now is the time to buy on John Mateer. Maybe if you're looking on the Heisman market, you know, he's going to be super athletic. He's got a big time opportunity early on in the season at Michigan and at Georgia. Got a win total of 7.5, juice to the over. What's your breakdown on the Sooners this year? And, you know, could they exceed expectations?
I think they absolutely can exceed expectations. I thought the win total was a win low. You know, one thing that I will say looking back, it's so hard to replicate what that front did last season. 10 times they held opponents under 120 rushing yards, 45 sacks, 122 tackles for loss. They surrendered just 38% successful third down conversions defensively. They were exquisite in the red zone. Only 13 red zone touchdowns given up against 31 trips. Elite, elite defense. And they do lose some talent. They're replacing some pieces from that defense. But I think based on what they have coming back and who they brought in, these guys are going to be nasty once again. You know, one of the many wonderful things that Phil Steele does in his annual publication is he does a great breakdown position by position and who his top units are. And Phil has the D-line for Oklahoma third best nationally. The linebacker group is fourth best. The secondary is eighth best nationally. You factor in elite special teams. I mean, this defense is going to run it back in 2026 in all likelihood. I think they're going to be really, really good. Taylor Wine on the D-line, Jaden Jackson, David Stone comes back, Okoye is there. You have so much production and so many guys that, I mean, they're just juniors. They're coming into form as college players right now, and there's a lot of growth that happens between a college player's tenure, getting into that upper-class sort of status. So I think along the defensive line, they're going to be really good. Linebacker also, Kip Lewis and Owen Heineke coming back. Proven guys who are just really good at what they do. This defensive front is going to be really nasty again, and they're going to create a lot of problems for the opposition. When you look at the offense, though, I mean, Mateer is back. He's fully healthy. The thumb has healed, and I think that they will be more explosive. The backfield is loaded with Torrey Blaylock and Xavier Robinson coming back. The receiver group looks good. I think if the O-line can stay healthy, we're going to see Oklahoma convert third down better. They're going to sustain drives more consistently. They'll score more points. All good things if you like Boomer Sooner. So I look at the schedule. It is nasty. You get Michigan on the road early. You got to go to Georgia. You go to Florida, Texas on the neutral, Ole Miss and A&M late, back-to-back. I mean, there are some really tough opponents on the schedule. I mean, it's the SEC, so week in and week out, you're going to have to bring it. But I like over the win total of 7.5. You chop around because there is some variance in the vig there. I think DK might have the best odds on that one. But I want to back Oklahoma week to week as well. I think that we're going to see this offense be a lot more consistent, and I think they'll score more points than they did last year. So I'm high on Oklahoma. I think if things break right, they could challenge in the SEC and be one of those teams that's fine to make the playoff.
So last year, Duck, I think I talked about this situational spot for like 2 months, and it came around. Everyone seemed to agree with it. Market moved that way. And then Oklahoma went to Philadelphia and beat the living breaks out of off Temple. So the situation didn't work well. But I've got another situation that I need a G5 team to rise to the occasion. And they're a good one. That would be the New Mexico Lobos. How about September 19th, Duck? You've got Oklahoma coming off of a trip to the Big House. And then next week, they would go to Athens. Can we have our boys from Albuquerque hang within, what would that number be, like 31, 28? Can we have them hang within four touchdowns in Boomer Soonerland?
Yeah, I mean, I would take New Mexico if we're catching over 28 and a half. I projected about 24, 25. Hey, New Mexico, you know, you're going to get toughness. Jason Eck has really instilled a tough attitude and belief. We saw that when New Mexico went to the Big House last season and really competed with Michigan. They're devoid of some talent. They're going to be less talented, obviously. But if you have a coach that gets the guys to believe, maybe they can sustain some drives in the first half, play some field position, do a couple things. I mean, I could see a scenario where New Mexico could potentially hang around. Not going to win. but we saw Oklahoma play real sluggishly against an FCS opponent as well, and they only won 35-3 against Illinois State. And so, yeah, I could see a defensive slog where maybe the Lobos defense can rise to the occasion, force a turnover, hold them to 35 or less, and maybe keep it within the number.
Yeah, maybe a first half play in that one. We grind it out, and then the second half, it gets a little ugly, but we will see. You know, it's funny, wrap it up on Oklahoma. John Mateer, circa has him 30-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. Look, he was the talk all of last season or off season. I want to say he was like 20-25-1. You know, he's one of those quarterbacks, Duck, that I feel like is falling into the, you know, I don't want to say out of sight, out of mind. Obviously, they were in the playoff a year ago, but we know how much he struggled. But yeah, 30-1. For him to win the Heisman. I think the Heisman this year is going to be fascinating, as we've discussed. And speaking of the Heisman, a lot of people will be making their pitch for Trinidad Chambliss with his extra year of eligibility to win the Heisman Trophy. Hard to disagree. We had Paul Stone on the show, you know, a couple months ago, and he liked Trinidad to win the Heisman Trophy. A great opportunity out of the chute here for Louisville, right? They have a neutral site game for Ole Miss against Louisville down in Nashville. Seen a little bit of market movement on that game. I know your colleague Mike Calabrese likes the underdog, and I would tend to agree, and see if we get that number back to a full touchdown. But I'm curious your breakdown of Ole Miss. You know, this is going to be a team where, you know, all eyes are going to be on them week three when they host LSU. Pete Golding, first time as the full-time head coach. You're looking at a win total in around 7.5 juiced over. What are you expecting from the Rebels in the first full season under Pete Golding?
Well, first of all, I thought that he and the truncated staff that they had during the playoff did an excellent job of getting his team ready to prepare, avoiding distractions. There was a lot going on within the program, and Ole Miss was ready to go in their playoff games. It was very impressive. And Trinidad Chambliss as well was such a dude, and he was such a playmaker with his raw ability and the ability for him to ad lib when plays broke down. It was spectacular all season. And to think about a guy who was playing D2 football at Ferris State before that, it was really quite fascinating. So it was so huge, I thought, for Ole Miss to get him back. The backfield looks good with Kewon Lacy coming back and Mekhi Frazier, who ran for 500 yards last year at Michigan State. They've got some guys from Syracuse and at receiver that should help with kind of limiting the damage for what was lost. You know, I think Ole Miss is a little bit undersized at receiver for what they typically have, but maybe Horatio Fields or Caleb Odom can emerge into that sort of tall weapon you can throw the jump ball up to and just let a guy kind of make plays and see what happens. The O-line is replacing both their tackles, and so there's a chance maybe they allow a little bit more pressure off the edge. And that's really the problem, because I think if you have edge control, you can kind of contain what Ole Miss wants to do with Chambliss running around back there and making plays kind of off the cuff. You know, I kind of thought Ole Miss might take a step back defensively, but when I looked into it extensively, I think the defense actually looks pretty shored up. I don't know that we get them back to 2024 type of form, but they could be just as good or better than they were last season. You know, the defense was not overly domineering, but they did give Ole Miss opportunities to be in close, tight-knit games against the elite competition. And I think guys like Cam Franklin and Sertarian Perkins should be, you get another year under their belt, should be another force along the defensive line. You're getting the transfers in at linebacker from California and from Baylor. If those guys hit, and if they're home runs, this defense really will be quite good. And I think the secondary could also improve. You know, last year the defense allowed 16 plays of 40 yards or more. And sometimes that's the difference between winning and losing. Penalties, blown coverages, long runs surrendered. That all adds up over the course of a season and could cost you a win or maybe even two. So I want to love this team. It's so hard with the staff transition, and you could dive into the schedule. This team was not elite last year. They had some situations go their way. They had plenty of one-score wins against Kentucky, Arkansas, Wazoo, LSU, all teams they should have probably handled a little bit more firmly than they did. But they ended up winning those games. Maybe they drop one they shouldn't. I mean, I look at the schedule this year and where they have some tough spots. Obviously, Louisville right away on the neutral field. Still up for debate on if Lincoln Kindholz is the guy at Louisville that'll help that program ascend. But I think the running game will be good, and I think Louisville's defense will be solid. So, I mean, that'll be a four-quarter battle for sure. The showdown in week three is what everyone's talking about against LSU will be such a monumental game. But then, I mean, you go to Vandy, you go to Florida in back-to-back weeks. You've got this brutal stretch for Ole Miss where they go to Texas, they play Auburn, they play Georgia, and then they got to go to OU. I wonder how many of those games they win. Maybe it's a 2-2 split. You know, I'll put it this way. Of the teams that we're talking about now, I think the drawdown on Ole Miss could be more severe. I wouldn't anticipate that Texas, Oklahoma, or Georgia has a really down season. And I don't know that Ole Miss will either, but I think they have the best chance to potentially take a step back and not be as good as everyone might think. Tough league. The league as a whole, you know, you're going to 9 conference games. There's going to be some challenges with that. You only get one bye. So I'd say 7-8 wins seems about right. I don't think we're going to get 10 or 11 wins on Ole Miss like we did last year.
You know, week four, you and I talk about spots all the time, and unfortunately, there's not a game of the year line. You know, you see it all the time, and you alluded to it. Week three is, in my opinion, Doug, I think the biggest atmosphere, the most anticipated game in the college football season is week three, LSU at Ole Miss. It's already announced prime time. Game day will absolutely be there. It's going to be monumental, as you alluded to. That week four game for a first-time head coach to try to get his team back up after all the emotions of that week three game, which, look, I'll be honest, I expect them to win it. I'm not necessarily laying 1.5 right now, but it would be hard-pressed for me to take points with LSU in that spot. But if they win that game, Duck, that might be the biggest letdown of the entire college football season, week four. I know it's an SEC game, which, you know, Florida probably would be a slight favorite. I think in that spot, if Ole Miss is coming off a win, you know, do we get a suppressed number a little bit? Is Ole Miss undefeated? Are they top 5 in the country because of a win over LSU? There's a lot of possibilities. So September 26, I'm almost guaranteeing you right now, unless this number runs completely crazy, that on the podcast September 24th, I will have Florida on my card.
Well, yeah, and you look what Florida has before that. I mean, they've got FAU, they're 4 touchdown favorites. They've got FCS Campbell, they'll be 5 or 6 touchdown favorites there. And then they experience an SEC road game at Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they drop that one. Maybe people are sleeping on the Gators at that point if they drop that one. And Ole Miss is coming in sky high. Could be some additional value points catching the home dogs there with Florida.
All right, one more team before we get to your best bet. And once again, Duck wrote up all of these teams extensively. There's charts. It's awesome. Check it out over at the Action Network. It's a great read as you're doing your summer prep. I'm curious your thoughts on a team that maybe is a little bit of a buy low, and it's not too far from where you sit. You're in the Carolinas. Let's go to South Carolina, because this was a team, you know, last year, you think about all the hype they had coming into the season. They were preseason top 15, got as high as number 10 in the AP poll before things kind of fell apart there. You get Lenore Sellers back, maybe another buy low opportunity on a quarterback. And South Carolina, you know, kind of eases their way into the schedule a little bit with Kent State, FCS Towson, home against Mississippi State, who we'll mention here in just a moment, and then they go on the road to Alabama. I also like a couple of spots for South Carolina on the schedule this year, where, you know, maybe you're getting a team at the right time, looking at like Georgia late in the season at home. But, you know, is South Carolina a team that maybe we could buy low a little bit? It felt like last year they were at the peak of, you know, their value. You could lay a bunch on over 5.5. You could lay or take some, you know, plus 110 on over 6.5. What's your breakdown on the Gamecocks this year?
Well, I mean, you just look at all the injuries that they faced last season on the offensive line, and Sellers was banged up at times. And I thought that there were some things that went against them that really just made it tough when you compound the scheduling issues. But I think South Carolina is a team that can overperform expectations. I like over 6.5 regular season wins. I think Sellers is a special talent, and I think that getting another year in that system will just make him feel much more comfortable. The offensive line has to play better. Back-to-back years now that the offensive line has surrendered at least 88 tackles for loss and 40 sacks, and they just have to. I would expect this year that they play with more continuity. They have elevated their talent level. I think that these guys are going to win a game they probably shouldn't win. It might be that game at Alabama. It might be against Oklahoma. It might be hosting Georgia late in the season, where maybe the Dogs are undefeated at that point in the schedule or only have one loss, and they're laying a bunch of points on the road. I think South Carolina is a team that, I think the defensive line will play better than they played last season. We see them continuing to develop depth, and I think they have it this year. I don't think it's going to be 10 wins and maybe a fringe playoff team necessarily for the Gamecocks, but I think they can beat Mississippi State and start the season 3-0. They host Kentucky. They host Tennessee. They even host A&M, and I think those are all winnable games when you look at the home schedule. The Palmetto Showdown against Clemson is a game they have to feel like they can win. I think this is a team that can buy for 7 or 8 wins, secure a January 1st bowl game. I think it could be a really solid team this year.
All right. The spot for South Carolina is October 24th. Tennessee will be coming off of the third Saturday in October, the rivalry with the Cigars post game against Alabama. They get that at home, Tennessee does, and then they have to go on the road to South Carolina, who will be coming off a bye. So that's the spot we're going to bat South Carolina. October 24th, really, really intriguing opportunity there for South Carolina. All right, Duck, let's get to your best bet here in the SEC. It is an under, and let's go to the land of the cowbell. And by the way, trivia question, boys and girls at home, maybe I'm tipping my hand a little bit. Do you know where former number one quarterback Jaden Rashada is playing college football? Yes, that would be Mississippi State if you had that one. He is expected to be what, the second or third string quarterback down there in Stark Vegas. Win totals 5.5, little juicy to the over here, but tell us why you're looking under Jeff Lebby's squad down in Starkville.
Yeah, and you know, there is some debate on this because you can find a 4.5, you can find a 5.5. And with given the VIG and where these are priced, I value a half a win about 60 or 70 cents. And so with the difference in the VIG, under 5.5 is the better bet. But I look at after the opener, they have such a tough start to the slate. They've got to go to Minnesota, they go to South Carolina. They see Missouri and Alabama on the schedule early. They play LSU, Oklahoma, Texas, all in succession. It's just such a brutal start. You know, last year they were able to overcome some things. They win a game at home against Arizona State that they were not favored to win. They start the season hot at 4-0, and they ended the season 1-8, and it just was not good. They just could not hold up defensively. And I worry about this team and this season going sideways. You know, if you get 4 wins early, and you're vying for bowl game eligibility, you kind of keep your head in it, and you're really fighting and clawing and scratching to try to get to 6-6. They got to a bowl game anyway at 5-7. But, I mean, if you just look at this start, going to Minnesota, South Carolina, Missouri, Alabama, LSU, Oklahoma, Texas, they're going to be dogs in every one of those games. And if they're not notching the wins, and you're 2-6 or 1-6 to start, it could be really really quite the struggling season. And then, I mean, you kind of play Auburn at the wrong time because Auburn's going to be going through some transition with Alex Golish and the USF offensive crew that's coming in, but they're going to have half a season to kind of get some things together and figure it out. And I just don't know about Kamario Taylor as the primary quarterback. When MSU was winning games last season, it was behind the arm of Blake Shapen doing the majority of the work. You know, you do have a decent talent with Fluff Bothwell coming in. He's coming back. He's a bell cow running back. And I think the offensive line, yeah, tough to be seen. They allowed so much havoc last year on that offensive line. 98 tackles for loss, 45 sacks given up, and they lose four starters. They couldn't protect the quarterback, and now you have a quarterback that at times looks uncomfortable back there in the pocket having to throw the ball. I don't know if the offense is going to take a step forward. I know that Kamario Taylor is a real special talent, but I just don't know about him as a passing quarterback. On 3rd and 10 when you have to have it, or in the red zone when you need to score a touchdown, yeah, I'm just not sure. And I don't know that the defense is going to hold up. We saw the second half of the year, they were horrific. They allowed almost 6 yards per carry on the ground and gave up 450 yards per game the last 9 weeks. Just could not get stops at any point the second half of the year. And now the defensive line and the secondary are gutted for Mississippi State. You get the new DC that comes in, Zach Arnett, who I like. They're actually going to co-DC it this year with him and Matt Brock. So we'll see. There's a lot of work to do on that side of the ball. Mississippi State does play my second toughest SEC schedule per my metrics. The only team that plays a tougher schedule is Arkansas in conference play. And you're just not going to get the favorable spot, the favorable start, in my opinion, yep. This go around. So I think it's under 5.5. I don't have them reaching bowl eligibility. I think they take a step back this year. So my favorite SEC win total of the entire season is Mississippi State under 5.5. I project 4.8.
Yeah, and week two, as you alluded to, man, Minnesota's a team that we've actually talked about a little bit here on the show, and we're going to get into the Big Ten. That's a team that could be sneaky good, and, you know, that's a big toss-up game to go on the road. You're obviously not dealing with the elements of weather early on in the season, but, yeah, it'd be curious to see how it all plays out. By the way, the other quarterback on the roster for Mississippi State, A.J. Swan, so former SEC quarterbacks. Well, I guess Jaden Rashada was committed to Florida, then went to Arizona State, then he was at Sacramento State. So it all comes full circle. He is now in the SEC. We're going to take a quick break here with Duck. We're going to talk some Big Ten, got some Week Zero best bets. But just a reminder, folks, as you all know, college football season is right around the corner. Preview magazine season is here. And our buddy Brett Ciancia over at Pick Six Previews has built one of the best. It's actually the number one most accurate college football preview magazine in America the past about 15 years. You could pre-order your copy right now for 2026, where he will have breakdowns of all 68 Power 4 teams. He'll have advanced stats, ATS trends, and his game grader projections. You can get a hard copy as well. So head on over to pick6previews.com. And Pick 6 Plus is back for 2026, the weekly in-season stat package that refreshes all season long every Tuesday. If you sign up before July 15th, you'll also get early access to his best win totals article, which went 6-1 a year ago. So we're pumped to be partnered up with our buddy Brett Cianci on Pick 6 Previews again, pick6previews.com. Quick break. When we come back, let's jump into the Big Ten and more with Duck from Action Network. All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. That gentleman right there is Joshua Nunn, a.k.a. Duck. You can follow him on Twitter at StepOnADuck. Make sure you read all his work over at Action Network. Breakdowns over at the Action Network, including the Big Ten. We're not going to go as in-depth on the Big Ten as we did the SEC, Duck. But a couple teams, you know, worth just mentioning here from a win total standpoint. I want to start with Ohio State because they were kind of the topic du jour a little bit last week on the pod. Win total at 9.5. Schedule's really challenging, as we know, with some of the road games they have. Indiana, Texas, they have Oregon at home. They obviously play Michigan again. They have to go to Iowa, which we'll talk about Iowa here in just a moment. But, you know, what's your breakdown on this Ohio State team with a win total at 9.5, albeit juice to the over?
I like over the win total. I've got these guys power rated higher than every opponent they're going to face on their schedule this season. Favored by double digits in 9 games overall. You know, I thought Ohio State was really handcuffed late in the season, not having as many strenuous situations for 11 straight weeks. You know, they were involved in easy games. They were coasting at the end. And I thought that really reared its ugly head the last two games of the season when they were in these epic battles in the Big Ten championship game and then in the playoff loss against Miami. I would guess more often than not that they get those situations figured out. Some of the issues like timid play calling, the conservative decision making, situational football, things that we just see that are just so we're unaccustomed to seeing with Ohio State. Third down, red zone, fourth and go. They failed when they needed it the most. And that has to be the focus of the offseason, I think. It's not necessarily that they were devoid of any talent. And I think that top to bottom, their roster looks pretty shored up. I think these guys can fix that. I think that they can learn from some of those things they went through the last 2 weeks of the season last year. It's over 9.5 for me. They haven't lost three regular season games in such a long time, and I do not see it this year. I do have them favored in all 12, but double-digit favorites in 9. I project 10.5 wins. It's over 9.5 for me.
Yeah, I haven't played it yet. I think I'm going to get to the window, though, on Ohio State over 9.5. I keep talking about it. I'm going to kick myself when they get 10 or 11 wins. I'm like, we talked about it all summer. I didn't play it. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the situation in Dumb and Dumber. Well, what if they shot me in the head? Hey, that's a risk we're willing to take. 9.5 wins with Ohio State when so many people you talk to, Duck, have them number one or number two in their power ratings. And it's tried and true. However, let's get to maybe a future in this conference. So it does feel like a trio up top, Ohio State, Indiana, Oregon, depending on what your power ratings look like. We had Matt Grill on last week. He had Ohio State 1, Indiana tied for second with Notre Dame, and Oregon 4. So it's tight up top. Oregon in that 3-1 range to win the Big Ten. Is that something that is enough value there in the futures market?
Yeah, I think it's probably worth a shot here. I've got these guys as 2 touchdown favorites in every game they play before Ohio State, with the exception that I've got them 7.2 points favored at USC is the only exception there. So you're going to have numerous opportunities for Oregon as huge favorites to go out and win games. You do get the Eastern travel situation before they have to go to the Shoe when they travel to Illinois. And one thing that I was really impressed with Oregon last year was how they traveled. They went into several hostile situations where they had to go west to east. We've seen teams do that where it hasn't looked very good. I thought Oregon was pretty buttoned up and took care of business when they had to travel east. And so I think that that's really something that you have to have factored in. The defense looks bowed up once again. I mean, the DL should, the defensive line should create so much pressure and havoc on the opposition, which will continue to aid the secondary to another strong season. Yeah, I think it's 10-2 or better for Oregon. And if they do notch 10 or 11 wins, they're going to be playing in the Big Ten title game. So yeah, 3-1. I think, you know, it's going to require a good grasp of things from the new OC and the new DC. And they did promote internally to acquire both those positions. So shouldn't be as much of a change as what you might think. But I think Oregon's going to be good once again.
All right, two more in the Big Ten. Like I said, we're not going to go crazy in depth. We did that with the SEC. But I always like when we have sharp betting minds have differing opinions. I think that's helpful for people as you go into the offseason. You can't, you know, everyone talking about one team, and then, you know, if that team has a little bit of a stumbling block, you're like, well, what the hell? What happened? Why didn't anyone, you know, envision this? So last week, Colby Dant talked about Iowa. He likes them over their win total, and I saw your write-up. You like them under. So give me some concerns about the Hawkeyes this year. Win total sitting at 7.5 right now.
Well, I mean, this is a hard one because you're betting against culture, the team attitude, selflessness, and the heart that Iowa plays with. And I think the culture that's been procured at Iowa is one that every FBS program can really aspire to achieve. There's not a bad thing to say about the program. This year, you know, the running back room is loaded with Kamari Moulton, who comes back. LJ Phillips comes in from University of South Dakota, where he led the FCS in rushing. But I do think they're a notch or two down on the offensive and defensive lines, and they lost so much on special teams. Their return guy, Caden Wetchin, was such a weapon last year, and he's gone. You're getting an FCS kicker. You're getting a Division III punter that comes in. Special teams is just going to be down from prior seasons, and I think the schedule actually lines up to be fairly challenging for Iowa. You've got Michigan, Ohio State, and then at Washington all consecutively. The road trip to Minnesota won't be easy. Wisconsin's going to be better than what most people probably anticipate for the Badgers. at Illinois won't be easy. Eventually, they're going to have to play Nebraska, and Nebraska's going to win one of these games. They're Iowa's 10-1 over the last 11 years, but Nebraska at the end is going to be priced within a field goal like it always is. Just seems like one where you're getting a lot of shots on goal for the opponent. It, you know, we kind of saw the offense lean into their identity last year when they brought in Mark Gronowski from South Dakota State. We all thought that the passing offense was going to be so much improved and they were going to be so much further along. Well, it just never manifested itself that way. And it's hard, again, when the program has so much continuity and consistency, but I think the schedule allows for Iowa to be in so many games, and they win so many games with defense, being in position, playing sound special teams. And I think this is just a year where they lose a game or two. The offense can't put it together, and I've got them at 7 wins. So I did take under 7.5 at plus 125. I think this is just one of those years for Iowa where they're not as strong at tight end, not as strong along the offensive line and defensive line. They just take a step back. I think 7-5 is the number for these guys.
Let's get to a couple week zero plays, and let's start with USC and San Jose State. This will be played at the Coliseum, I think middle of the afternoon, so it'll be pretty hot. But, you know, a lot of uncertainty with San Jose State. But the question, and I think when we look at this game and the way you've bet it, is San Jose State going to be able to slow down this USC offense? And is this going to be a game like we saw last year in their opener when they put up 73 on Missouri State, or in week two when they put up 59 on Georgia Southern? Is Lincoln Riley just going to be a big old bully here and try to put up as many points as possible on San Jose State? So the total right now is at 57.5 at DraftKings. And I know that's something that you're looking at, points galore week zero between USC and San Jose State.
Yeah, let's get into it. I mean, I just cannot understate enough, or I can't overstate, excuse me, how bad San Jose State's defense is going to be this season. I mean, that unit stunk last year, and the defense loses so much production. And the talent that they use to backfill with reserve G6 and FCS talent is just not going to cut it all season, let alone in this game. They played a lot of bad offenses last year, and they allowed a boatload of points. They couldn't stop the run. The D-line, the secondary, and that linebacker, there are just such a major talent deficiency at all three levels. And yet they're still running the spread-and-tread offensive system. They're less talented at quarterback and at receiver. They're not going to be as explosive. So I can see this one kind of snowballing quickly. Maybe Ken Niumatalolo takes a few gambles to try to keep his team in it in the first quarter, which will lead to short fields for USC. But USC is equipped to take advantage of this defense here. You've got Jaden Maiava coming back. He's going to have a field day against this defense while breaking in a new receiver core. The running back room is very stout with Wayman Jordan and King Miller coming back. They're both going to get a lot of touches in space here. The offensive line looks really good. The question is this, but Duck, why would USC run it up here? They're not going to do that. San Jose State may not score. This is going to stay under. Well, if you dive into the minutiae of the early season, and we'll start with last year, where USC ran it up against Missouri State 73-13, scored 17 points in the fourth quarter, two touchdowns in the fourth quarter against Georgia Southern in a game they won 59-20. You can go all the way back to Lincoln Riley's first year, where they beat Rice 66-14. They scored 35 second half points, throwing 40-yard bombs deep into the fourth quarter. That same year, Stanford, their games against Stanford and Fresno State early in the season were high scoring and had late points. In 2023, 56-28 against the same San Jose State team. Again, throwing bombs late in the fourth quarter, 66-14 against Nevada, scored 24 points in the fourth quarter. There's just so many situations where when games get out of hand, some coaches will seek to shorten the game, and other coaches will just look to get reps. And I think when you have an experienced quarterback in Maiava who's going to get a lot of work this season, but he's breaking in a new receiver core, you need to get these guys meaningful reps. The run game, even if they do run the ball a good majority of the fourth quarter, they're going to be explosive, and the depth of San Jose State is really going to be tested. And I don't think they hold up here. So this is one where I do think San Jose State in the second half will continue to run their stuff, and they'll punch a touchdown or two in. But USC can score 56, 59, 63. I mean, and they do that early in the season. So I think this point total is probably 10 points too low. I bet it at 55.5. I went back for more at 58.5. I like this one all the way up to 62.5. Woo. This is a dead nut over for me.
This will be a noon local kick, so it will be toasty, no doubt about it. In week zero, it'll be on NBC. I do wish, just a little side note, that Danny Scudero, who was really fun to watch last year for San Jose State, I wish he had gone somewhere better than Colorado. I feel like Colorado is going to be kind of – I would have loved to see him at a little higher P5 team or P4 team, but you mentioned the quarterback situation. It seems like they're rolling with Luke Weaver, the backup from Hawaii, so – you know, we'll see how that plays out there. Luke Weaver did have the memorable to many touchdown
the
pass.
The weave heave. The yeah, weave the, heave.
The, got us all to the window on Christmas.
Got us to the window.
Yeah, thank you. You will always be remembered in our hearts, Luke Weaver, for our early Christmas present in the Hawaii Bowl last Christmas Eve. All right, one more game in week zero that I'm curious to hear your breakdown. Welcome to the FBS, North Dakota State, and we get the Fargo Dome in week zero hosting Jacksonville State. So just a couple of years ago, this would have been an FCS game. Instead, it's an FBS game. It'll be a 5:30 Eastern kick time on CBS Sports Network week zero. And looking at the spread right now, let me just double check. Yeah, it's still 8.5. The Bison still 8.5 point favorites against the Gamecocks.
Yeah, and we saw this last year regularly where the offense was less explosive. The ground-heavy approach was able to wear down teams that they played on their schedule. But generally, they do that with a dynamic quarterback play. And last year, you know, with Cole Payton, he could run around a little bit. He completed 72%, and they had such an explosive FCS receiver in Bryce Lance. 51 catches, 1,100 yards. And they were just able to procure some of these drives with long explosive pass plays. I don't think they have the receiver weapons, and they're breaking in a new quarterback that's unproven. You're also going to have a situation during the longevity of this season. Last year and for years and years, North Dakota State has been just so much better than their opponents. And you saw that really show up in the trenches, O-line, D-line. They were able to just completely bleed you to death in the second half by running the ball, playing very slow. And I just don't know necessarily if we're going to see the explosive offense. And I don't know if they're as talented along the offensive and defensive line as what they were in the past. The defense last year was not as dominant at the FCS level as it was in prior years. We even saw that show up in the playoffs where they lost at home against Illinois State. With the Redbirds had 422 yards and 23 first downs against these guys. Well, that just would have never happened in the FCS playoffs in prior years. I think we're getting a situation where the team, you know, they're used to being 30-point favorites against everybody they play other than the occasional FBS team in South Dakota State, and it's not going to be that way. Jacksonville State has a lot to like coming back with quarterback Caden Creel. Jalen Likely and Justice Savage are going to split the load at running back, and I think we're going to get fresh legs for the Gamecocks in the fourth quarter. They've got such a dude at receiver, does Jacksonville State. DeAndre Johnson, 6'8", 220. He averaged 24 yards a catch last year, but he was so underutilized, and they started to finally figure out how to use him, and they were taking some deep shots, and he was really such a factor. But I think he creates a favorable mismatch for Jacksonville State against the smaller North Dakota State secondary that goes 6'1", 6 feet, and 5'11". And, you know, the other thing is we're getting a new OC for Jacksonville State in Taylor Housewright. He was the tight ends coach here last year, but he comes in from Montana State. There's a little bit of familiarity. We're going to get the run-heavy approach, but it's going to be slower pace than what we've seen from Jacksonville State the last couple of years. I think that they're going to try to outpossess they're maybe lean a little bit more on their defense. It's not going to be as breakneck pace as what we saw under Rich Rodriguez. It's kind of even teams here, in my opinion. I think Jacksonville State has really established their roster as an FBS roster here. The defense is coming around. I really like what Charles Kelly did last year coming into a tough situation. I thought their front seven really competed well, and I think they will go in there and hang. I'm not going to call for them to win the game outright, but I think this is two more evenly matched teams than what people might think, and you're getting over a full touchdown here. Anything over 7.5, I think, is a go here. So I played Jacksonville State plus 8.5. I think we're getting a close game here in week zero.
All right, Duck, let's dive into the nitty gritty, why people come here and listen to your podcast during the year with Mike Calabrese, breaking down the G6. And let's get into action. We all have a soft spot in our heart for a little Tuesday and Wednesday night football. It's going to be pretty weird to see Sacramento State playing middle of the week football. We'll get to the Hornets in a moment. But let's start with the defending champ, Western Michigan. And Lance Taylor and his squad, hell of a way to finish the season, won their final six games, won their bowl game in dominant fashion, won 10 of 11 after starting 0-3. If you recall, week one, they were really competitive against Michigan State, covered that game. But now, instead of kind of being that out-of-nowhere team in year three under Lance Taylor, now you're the hunted. Now you're the big boy coming back as the champion. You know, your defensive coordinator, now there were ties, but your defensive coordinator got poached and is now the D coordinator of the Chargers. I mean, it's kind of crazy, the rise there, even though Chris O'Leary, for those who don't know, was the safeties coach with the Chargers and went and got coordinator experience. But Western Michigan win total sitting at 7.5. It's juiced under at -150 at DraftKings. What do you make of the defending MAC champion Western Michigan Broncos?
Well, I mean, the MAC is just such a competitive league, and it's so hard to repeat. The MAC doesn't see repeat champions very frequently. And top to bottom, I mean, you get the wacky things that happen in November with the games on Tuesday nights in the cold. And I think with Western Michigan, what we saw last season is you had such an overperforming defensive front. And in the MAC, where the passing offenses are generally weaker and teams lean on the run, if your opponents can't run the ball against you, that really allows you to have such an upper hand when you can play these lower scoring defensive field position battles and your offense is running the ball and your opponents can't do that. We saw that time and time again with Western Michigan last year. And I actually thought that they were quite fortuitous in many of their games. They got lucky to defeat Toledo. They were lucky in their wins against Ohio and Central Michigan. I mean, these guys were in a 7-3 game against UMass in the third quarter, and the offense just struggled week in and week out. They would eventually find some explosive plays. And I do like Brock Lowry coming back, but I just don't necessarily know that we're going to see these guys run through the conference. And the non-conference portion of their schedule, by the way, does provide some significant challenges. They go to Michigan early. They got to go to Rice, which is just going to be quirky playing that offense and playing against a team that's going to be able to run the ball against you with a depleted front seven. Rice is going to bring it. And then you get the Battle of the Broncos when they host Boise State. Very, very tough in a game that I don't know that Western Michigan is going to be able to win. Then you get into league play, you go to Central Michigan, you go to Toledo in back-to-back weeks. Both those teams are going to be playing with revenge. Eastern Michigan gets the bye week before playing WMU. They close the season with Miami of Ohio. I think it's just a team that's probably due for a little negative defensive regression. I think Lance Taylor's a phenomenal head coach. I think he's done an exquisite job bringing Western Michigan up from where they were before he got there. And I think that WMU can really be a solid MAC team this year. Could be 5-3 or 6-2 in league play, but to call for 8+ wins is just too many here. So I did play under 7.5.
All right, let's get to the weirdest connection in all of sports, and that's the fact that Sacramento State is in the Mid-American Conference. Now, you could argue Northern Illinois being in the Mountain West is just as weird, or any of those West Coast teams, or Stanford and Cal being in the ACC. There's a lot of weird stuff, obviously, in college football this year, but Sacramento State being in the MAC is just so wacky. And right off the jump, week zero, we get a MAC conference game, Sacramento State at Eastern Michigan. What a time to be alive, ladies and gentlemen. But, you know, this is a team, and I can't remember. I think we talked about it on the podcast. You and I hit a alt win total parlay with Sacramento State under 6.5, UConn under 7.5 wins. We laid, I think, $122 on that at DraftKings. Right now, you can get under 5.5 on Sacramento State. It's up to $1.60. What in the world are we expecting from Sacramento State, who, you know, unlike North Dakota State, Duck, who has been a power in the FCS for years and years and years and would come into the FBS and beat a FBS opponent. I mean, Sacramento State was, you know, 3-9 in 2024. They were 7-5 a year ago. So it's not like it's a team that is, you know, brimming with confidence. They also have a new head coach. Brendan Marion has moved on. He's now the offensive coordinator at Colorado. So what in the world should we expect from the Hornets in the MAC? Yes, once again, in the MAC, where they will play games against Toledo and Central Michigan in the middle of the week in November.
I think it's going to be a struggle. I think under 5.5 is an absolute no-brainer. I project 4.2 wins. And you mentioned the opening game against Eastern Michigan. I thought that that line was very telling, where Sacramento State are 8.5-point dogs on the road to EMU. They're going to struggle. I mean, we saw this team quickly push to move to FBS after the head coach left. And, you know, you get the new guy who gets in there and he starts recruiting and he goes through a full recruiting cycle. They were planning to play as an FCS independent last season before finally getting, or this upcoming season, before getting the call and the approval to move up. But you're getting, you're really getting an FCS roster here. And I think this transition is going to look so much different than what we will see with North Dakota State, who, again, North Dakota State won 9 FCS national championships in 10 years. They were far and away better than their competition in the trenches. They overwhelmed everybody at that league. They would have been power rated as a top 30 or 40 FBS team, and Sacramento State was just nowhere close to that. I don't think that the Hornets are ready in the trenches. I don't think the skill guys are going to be able to create a ton of separation. I think with the staff transition, I just don't necessarily see that it's going to go very well. We get them as 8.5-point dogs in the opener against Eastern Michigan. They got to go to Fresno State. They play North Dakota State. They'll be catching 15 to 18 points in that matchup. And then the way that the schedule closes is also brutal. You got to play Toledo. You got to play Central Michigan on the road in the cold in Mount Pleasant. You go to Hawaii late. Just absolutely brutal travel. So for them to exceed the win total, they're going to have to sweep Mississippi Valley State, who they will beat, UMass, Bowling Green, Ohio, Ball State, Kent State. And I just absolutely do not see that happening. Again, I don't think this team is going to be ready in the trenches. I don't think you're going to have situational execution when you have to run the football. You know, they played with such a quirky offense last year in the go-go, and before that it was a different offense. So now you have your third offensive install in 3 years. It's just going to be a season of transition for Sacramento State. It's kind of going to be fun to see them play on ESPN, and they're going to have some exposure that they've never had before. But when it's butt cold and you're going to Central Michigan or Ball State and you are just not equipped to handle that, I would want no part of that whatsoever. So I don't have this team getting to bowl eligibility. Under 5.5 is a play that I really do like. I think it's probably closer to 3-9 this year for Sac State.
All right, let's wrap up a couple quick hitters before we get out of here. Our long nightmare has ended, thankfully. Us, for the betting space, we don't have to talk about Brendan Sorsby anymore. Who knows where he'll be playing football this upcoming fall, with the CFL saying thanks but no thanks, the NFL doing the same. Who knows? But not our problem anymore. But I am curious, Duck, with Sorsby being out, where are you on this Texas Tech team? For listeners of this podcast, they're well aware. I have Texas Tech at even money to win this conference. I didn't think the drop-off from Sorsby to Hammond was that big. I think the schedule is a massive win for Texas Tech. The fact that they don't face BYU, Kansas State, or Utah in conference play. And if we're sitting in a championship game with an even money ticket, then we can work our way off of that, and, you know, whether it be a hedge or try to middle it. But I am curious. I don't want to lead the witness here. I'm curious your expectations on Texas Tech without Sorsby in 26.
Yeah, I was probably over-aggressive in downgrading them. I downgraded them in my power ratings a full 6 points after the news broke that he wouldn't be back with the team. I still have Texas Tech favored by 12 points in every game this season, 12 points at a minimum. The composite talent ranking is so far ahead of everybody else in the conference, and the schedule broke so well for them. Like you mentioned, no BYU, no Utah, no Kansas State. And they catch Houston, Arizona State, and TCU all at home. You get a manageable road slate. You know, and this is one thing I wanted to bring up with this, because there is a position for prediction markets for every bettor to have in their portfolio. And there was so much hyperbole that went on after the news broke, and there was such a fire sale on all the futures tickets. The prediction markets were going so bananas on these futures that you were able to get plus 200 on Texas Tech to win the conference. And still today, you can find plus 140s, plus 150s on the prediction markets for Texas Tech to win the conference, because there's just such a negative predisposition about what Texas Tech is not going to be that I think people are forgetting what they will be. And I think that you can still, with the carnage that we'll see at the top of the Big 12, I think there's probably about 6 teams that are in position to potentially vie for the Big 12 title this season. I think Utah BYU, Kansas State, Arizona could all find their way to be playing meaningful football in November. But Texas Tech is going to have to lose three times in order to not be in the mix there. And I even think with two losses, these guys are going to get into the Big 12 championship game where they're going to be laying 7 or 8 points against anybody that they play. So my recommendation is take the even money on Texas Tech to win the conference. Or if you're willing to display a little patience and do a little work, go to the prediction markets and put some stuff out there to get the plus 130, plus 140, because those orders are filling. And you'll get a nice, juicy ticket price on Texas Tech to win the conference, something I still think they're very capable of doing.
Let's wrap on this, Stuck. The Pac-12, very unique situation this year, where if you go to DraftKings, they have a specific note, 11 games. The win totals are 11 games because we don't know what the 12th game is going to be. We know the home teams. We know the road teams. You could kind of put two and two together. But before we dive into those win totals, I know you and I have talked about it. There are books, and make sure you read the fine print, right? Because some might be grading on 11 and some might be grading on 12. And sometimes those numbers don't necessarily add up, right?
Very much so. I think it's very important to seek clarification. I've done that at MGM explicitly, where I asked five different ways, very specific detail about their house rules. And I have confirmation from them in writing that they are factoring the 12th game because it is a scheduled regular season game that is not a postseason game. Although the opponent is TBD, it is a scheduled game that will be played. And so they are factoring over at MGM the flex game into the equation for regular season wins. FanDuel and some of the others are also factoring in the 12th game, and it's pretty explicitly stated in the betting menu as such. DraftKings was one that I thought did it the right way when they opened up and they put the numbers out there and they said this is only going to be settled on an 11-game schedule. So one way you could play it is if there are teams you like the under on, play it at DK where you're only getting the 11 games factoring in. If there are teams you like over on, and there are a couple that I liked, and you know, I hit those right away with Fresno State, I like the over. Washington State, I like the over with 12 games factored in. Colorado State's another one where I think you look at the composite talent at Colorado State with what they have coming in and who they have coming in at head coach. And Jim Mora has done so many good things at UConn. He's bringing some talent. He's bringing some of the coaching staff with. The tight end room looks exquisite. I think they can create some mismatches both with their pass receiving tight ends and also helping in the run game. Haas Hejny is going to come in from Oklahoma State. Colorado State's a team where I don't know that the drop off and the tail off in this league is going to be as drastic as you might see in a league like the Mountain West, where a lot of these teams have left to come to the Pac-12, and then the Mountain West backfilled with some other teams. I think top to bottom, the Mountain West could have a really, really low floor, but I think the Pac-12 is going to be a real competitive conference this year. But the fact of the matter is, if you like any of these teams to go under on the regular season win, you want to find the book that plays 11 games to factor in because of the unique flex scheduling that the Pac-12 has chosen to do this season.
Such a great point, and I think it's so important, and I'm glad we talked about it. And let's use Colorado State, for example, because I did play their win total over at BetMGM, and just compare it, right? BetMGM factoring in 12 games is 3.5 minus 15 to the over. DraftKings 11 games is 3.5 minus 30 to the over. You're getting an extra home game, by the way, because Colorado State is hosting that flex game. And you know, you mentioned it briefly, and just to dive back into it. So it's not my biggest season win total, but I just trust Jim Mora. And you think back to his first year at UConn. What were the expectations of UConn in year one when Jim Mora came in? It was kind of like, wow, Jim Mora's going to UConn. What the heck are they going to do? They were coming off of a 1-11 season. Duck, Colorado State is coming off of a 2-10 season. And in year one at UConn, he got them to a bowl game. They went 6-6 in the regular season. So if you're giving me Jim Mora with some influx of talent, as you alluded to, and, you know, they're bringing in a guy like Mel Brown, who's a good running back at UConn, Haas Hejny, as you mentioned, the quarterback from Oklahoma State, I think they're going to find ways to win some games. They open up the season at home against Wyoming. They open up the season at, or then they have Southern Utah, and they're more than likely going to lose to BYU. But I think there's a reality, Doc, where they're looking at three wins potentially in the first five games. It's not going to be easy, but yeah, I'll take my gamble, so to speak, with Colorado State and Jim Mora getting me to four wins in year one.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real possibility with Wyoming and Southern Utah on the schedule, and then Oregon State comes to Fort Collins, and that's a game that will have to be considered winnable. Mm-hmm. But even going down the line, a trip to Logan and playing Utah State is not completely out of the question. Going to Wazoo, who really knows exactly what that Wazoo team, which is going through some similar turmoil, I mean, that's another game that's winnable. And then the other important thing to factor is you've got to factor the motivation of these road teams when they're going into the flex game, because that flex game is not a conference game. So the conference standings will already be solidified, and you're not really improving your position in any sort of way to try to win the conference that last week of the season. So whoever comes to Colorado State might be DOA before they even get on the plane, because it just may not mean anything to them. But it'll certainly mean something to Colorado State, or could mean something to Colorado State. So I think it's an intriguing team. I think that Colorado State had much more talent, and they could have been so much better equipped last year to accumulate some wins. And it was coaching gaffes and some goofy decision-making with their quarterback last year, rotating in three or four different quarterbacks. I didn't like anything they did last year. I think it'll look a lot more competitive and a lot more competent for Colorado State this year.
You gave out a best bet the last time you were on, and I hit it not at the number you gave or that you had in pocket. I took UConn under 6.5 under 6.5 at -150. That's now -200. I think you added like -110, if I remember correctly. So you've seen the market move quite a bunch in your way, and based off of a couple of win total parlays we have them with Sac State, we have them with Cincinnati. We are very much locked in on a 500 or worse season for the UConn Huskies with Jim Mora Jr.'s departure.
Yeah, and this is just one where I kind of thought that this market was off about a win or a win and a half. I thought the number should have been closer to five. And then when the particular book that you and I were placing bets at, when they put out 6.5, and then they also put out an alternate at 7.5. And so you and I don't recommend parlaying and trying to hit the Lambo Lotto parlays, but when you and I were able to find some of these regular season wins and you can box them in with other teams, I think we did it with Cincinnati's alt, and we did it with Sacramento State's alt. I mean, it creates a situation where you're banking on two teams that are likely to have bad seasons. They don't even have to have horrific seasons. They just have to kind of be at that 5-7 or 6-6 mark. And you and I are going to cash tickets. And I think that's what we're going to see here. But we did talk about this one early. We talked about UConn. I still think we're in a great position here. The market has obviously agreed with what we did. But I've got UConn favored in three games this year. And the talent is taking a drop. The coaching change, in my opinion, results in a downgrade. I mean, we all know, and anyone listening in on this podcast who are diehard college football fans and avid bettors know, nobody did less with more in the MAC than Jason Candle. That guy had more talent in the MAC year after year after year. Should have won three or four MAC titles. I think he ended with one. But, you know, the schedule is really interesting. And if we just remove the names that are on the schedule, and if you just kind of look at some of the statuses of the programs, The UConn Huskies are going to play Maryland, Syracuse, North Carolina, Temple, Air Force, Wyoming. These are all programs that are desperate to make a bowl game. These are teams that need to accumulate the wins. I'm not suggesting North Carolina or Wyoming or all these teams are going to achieve bowl game eligibility, but these are teams that cannot afford to take a week off. They've got to start notching win column tallies. And so you're going to get a full slate of opponents that are going to be fully focused on UConn. UConn's not going to catch a lot of these teams by surprise, given the success that they've had the last couple of seasons. They draw Old Dominion and James Madison from the Sun Belt, which I think are going to be really, really challenging opponents. I think it's 5-7 at absolute best. I think it's closer to 4-8 this year for UConn. Less with more. That's what we're going to see.
Duck, always appreciate it, man. It's always a blast picking your brain, especially in the early months here as we continue to get prepped. At Step on a Duck on Twitter, Action Network. Make sure you check that out. Big Bets on Campus, the podcast feed that he'll be a part of here shortly over the summer months and then during this season. You know, I will always love picking your brain, brother. Appreciate the insight, and let's cash some tickets.
Yep, sounds good. Thanks for having me on. We'll see you guys at the window.
There he is, Joshua Nunn at Step on a Duck. I'm at 1 Tim Murray. Thanks to our producers, Wyatt Tomchek and Ryan Hunter. Please continue to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And every episode is up on YouTube as well. We'll be back next week with another installment of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.